Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nimco.
Today, we're back to basics. Where are the jobs? I'm going to talk about that in very specific, and even more specific, I invite you to call to see if we can come up with a job that's right for you. Whether you're 16 or 76, whether you are unemployed or well-employed and unhappy, we're going to focus on the basics, trying to come up with a new career for you. So I'll give out the phone number. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nimco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Career Builder came out with a study recently that shows where the accelerated growth is in the next 5 years. In a past show, I mentioned some of them: electronic shopping, translation and interpretation services, offices of physical, occupational, and speech therapists and audiologists, home health care services, continuing care retirement communities, telemarketing bureaus and other contact centers, marketing consulting services. So I want to share some more. So not surprising, environmental and conservation and wildlife organizations, it continues to burgeon. It becomes ever more central to what people, especially here in the Bay Area, believe is critical. And, you know, I have not been shy to say that I think even before the 538 polls have shown that Hillary is pretty much a slam dunk to win, that she was likely to win, and therefore that jobs like related to the environment as well as immigration are likely to burgeon in the coming years. Next in the list of Career Builder projected fast-growing careers, again, no surprise there, computer system design services. Next, nail salons. I'll leave that uncommented. Portfolio management. I've never really quite understood that. When study after study shows that the 85% of actively managed mutual funds, for example, perform worse than a non-managed index, that is, let's say, the S&P 500. How can there be this continued growth in portfolio management? But who am I to try to trump, pardon the expression, the megatrends? And appears to be continuing to grow. Anyway, psychiatric and substance abuse facilities. Certainly, nobody could argue that, I mean, the studies are unequivocal that after marijuana is legalized, there is an increase in emergency room visits and psychiatric problems. And so not surprising that certainly the nation, and California for sure, is moving toward legalization, that there will, while many people are happy about the freedom to do what they please in their after-work hours, there is no question that there will be an increase in psychiatric and substance abuse. Area to grow, if that's an area of interest in yours, I think there's no question that that will burgeon. Pet care, even in tight times, people, including me, like my doggy Einstein, we really want to make sure that we, you know, everything from dog toys to good quality foods out of the crap that's filled with chemicals, you know. I don't mean to do a plug, but Origen, A-O-R-I-J-E-N, is a very high-grade food. It costs about five times as much as cheapo dog food. But anyway, people are willing to spend on their pets. I think probably even as times get ever more stressful, which I think they are, I think pets represent an island of sanity. And so we, you know, it's as much for ourselves as for our pet. We feel like we need to really take care of that that source of nurturance and kindness and innocence in an age that is unfortunately far from innocent. So pet care-related careers, whether it be dog walkers or dog sitters or retailers or people who work at humane societies, I don't know for sure, but I would imagine that that's what pet care. It says pet care except veterinary, so it sounds like that, which had been growing, may have peaked. And the other areas of growth, let's see, employment placement services. Unfortunately, we are seeing an ever greater transformation of full-time benefited jobs into temp, part-time, gig kind of jobs. And, of course, who benefits from that but employment placement agencies? So, for example, if you're a sales-oriented person, that's what temp agencies are, really. They try to convince an employer that they should use that agency, and they convince would-be workers to take the job. And so sales-oriented people, perhaps that's surprising, but employment agencies are a place that that such people could find satisfaction. Next, administrative management and general management consulting services. That's just, I guess, bureaucracy continues to grow. And this, of course, is across the public and private sector. About 10 years ago, there was something called disintermediation, where they were reducing the amount of managers and whatever. But certainly one of the field I know very well, which is higher education, part of the major reason for the bizarre cost of higher education is a mammoth increase in the amount of administration. So that's, by the way, where I would think. I'm not sure. I think higher education's heyday is over. It's, you know, we talk about peak oil. I think we've got peak higher education. I think with so many courses available for free, and we see so many, not only stories, but statistics about people who have college degrees and can't find good work and have these mountains of debt, I think that higher ed was a really cushy, great place to find a full-time benefited job and a lovely environment. But I think that's going away. I think probably more likely the areas for growth are not going to be in products and consumers. They're going to be in the nonprofit, in the government sector. I think immigration. I think basic health care for all. The word for all has become, you know, code for egalitarianism, and that, and redistributing to the poor. And so I think when Hillary gets elected, and although it's very unlikely that the Democrats will take the House, they will very likely take the Senate, and that's going to result in ever more what I call ever more redistribution. That's the unvarnished term, and that's going to mean more services for the poor, whether it be job training, whether it be health care, whether it be immigration rights. So if you and many KELW listeners share those values, that, in my mind, is going to be where the growth will be. Also, more regulation of business. I think that, you know, Dodd-Frank and Sarbanes-Oxley were only the beginning. There's still the sense among many people that businesses are given too much freedom and that they should be more restricted. And I think that regulatory agencies, not just at the federal level, but at the state and local level, will likely be sources of increase. And because government, it's unseemly for government to do a lot of part-time temping and gig hiring, let alone offshoring, I think they will continue to, government will evermore be the last bastion of full-time benefited positions. I also think unions, and this is just a side note, are going to have a revitalization. I think that right now the fear that exists among the former middle class is growing, and I think the antipathy to employers is growing. And so I think working for unions, and this is shooting from the hip, but I think working for unions is going to be a growth opportunity that is yet underappreciated, one guy's opinion. Similarly, as I said, ever more of the gross domestic product is going to be moving from the private sector to the public sector, and where public sector, one of the main vehicles by which the public sector distributes money is with grants. And so people to write grants for nonprofits and foundations, this is back to the Career Builder study that's showing an acceleration of these careers that I'm mentioning, not the union one, but the others, in the next 5 years. So working as a grant writer or grant maker, writing a grant for a nonprofit or making grants, working for, and these are difficult jobs to get, but working for a foundation that gives away money, I think that ever more of that, and for the government, I mean, the government gives out grants, lots of them, and people who are going to be reviewing those grants, writing the grant proposals, I think that's where the money is. Anyway, I've got a lot more of these careers right that I think are growing, but I'd like to invite you to call in if you have a career problem. Those are all advice that's all career directions that are generic. I have a fair number of careers in my brain that I would like to use to help you find what is a right career for you. So if you are contemplating a career change, or you're the parent of a young person starting out, or you are a young person starting out, maybe especially a shout out to you, If you would like to get some advice on what career might be wise for you individually based on your strengths, weaknesses, interests, and the job market, I'd be happy to help you with what I call a workover. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. More areas for growth that are projected to growth by this Career Builder survey is ambulance services. Not quite, I guess maybe that's because of the aging boomers, but yes, EMTs, paramedics. Apparently, I'm seeing more and more ambulances out there. I don't know, it's just maybe I'm getting older and more aware of those than when I was younger, but yes, probably ambulance services. And remember, every company that provides a service, it's not just the direct service providers like the ambulance drivers, but ambulance companies like AMR, American Medical Response, you know, they have a whole set of human resources people, accounting people, finance people, media relations people. So just because you don't want to be an EMT or a paramedic doesn't mean you can't work for one of those kind of companies. And yes, they may play, you know, they tend to advertise jobs. But as you well know, once a job is openly advertised, it tends to get a lot of applications. So unless you're the perfect person, you may not get it. So it may be helpful to try to network your way in through people you already know into those kind of organizations. All right. Phone number again, 415, for if you want to work over. If you have any kind of career problem, but especially if you're looking for a new career or a first career, phone number, 415-841-4134. What's that's the number for? That's the number for a work over here on Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, I have a question. I graduated from college in 2007. I majored in art studies, which is kind of a tricky major to find a job in.
Right.
So I tried a couple of different things. I've been working part-time for an architect with the hopes that eventually I'll get my license and work in that field. And it's a nice, stable position for me. But on the weekends, I've been working as a clothing stylist in the Bay Area, which is awesome because hourly I make a lot of money, but it's totally feast or famine. A couple people have suggested to me that I try to pursue that full-time since it makes so much more money, but it's I don't know what the future economy is like, and I don't know, you know, looking forward, it seems like a really risky thing. So I'm kind of caught in the middle.
Tell me a little more about, you said a clothing stylist?
Yeah, I've been working with clients mostly in the tech industry and helping them organize their closets and shop and, you know, look cool.
Sounds like a lot of fun. I mean,
given
that you love it so much, I want to be sure before we jump ship to something else that we are sure that you're marketing as well as you should. First question, are you more of a solo operator or would you be wise to hook up with somebody else who does that?
I would ideally like to work with somebody else who can help me out. I have so much work now that I can't even handle it on my own.
Wow.
I guess I'm just afraid of making that next step to be a legitimate business.
Well, you know, it may be a little early to jump to lose your stable job, but it may not be. But what would happen if you now bring a lot to the table. If you have more work than you know what to do with, there may be somebody who maybe, let's say, example, has some really good marketing skills or whatever, who could become either your employee or your partner, who you'd say, here's the deal. Right now, I've got more clients I know what to do with, and I will refer some of them to you, and you can keep 80% of the money that comes in. I'll only keep 20% because I've obviously built the business, and it's appropriate for me to do that. And
right.
But I also, I've selected you because you are marketing-oriented, and I'd like you to reach out. I'll teach you what I know about how to market. And I want, because I don't have the time to do it because I'm working part-time, at least I'm working during the week for an architecture firm. If you would go do that work, we will then agree that what you bring in, we will split. If you do the work, you'll get, 80%. And if I do the work, I'll get X percent. So you work out an agreement so that she gets some of the results of her marketing effort. And then if it seems that there is plenty of work, then at that point you may say, okay, I think now I can go and quit this job. What's your reaction to that?
I love that idea. It seems less scary than to do it by myself.
Exactly. And that's what many people find. They find that, you know, and again, I'm not asking you to quit your job yet until it's really clear. It sounds like it's moving in the direction of being clear, but not fully clear yet. And so by getting somebody else, that's going to reduce your workload. Because remember, you deserve a fair amount of credit for having built up a business enough that you're able to get more clients you know what to do with. So that's awesome. Right. So now, you know, the next baby step is to find somebody. And ideally, it's somebody you already know. You know, it really is a minefield looking for an employee. There is so much, frankly, there is so much dishonesty in the application process that it's risky to just place an ad because somebody's resumes can be BS, their references can be their girlfriend or boyfriend rather than real former boss. You just don't know. Whereas if it's somebody you already know and you have, you know you get along, you know they have a good skill set, you know they have a good work ethic, you know they don't have a drug abuse problem, it's much better. Is there a human being whom you know who you might have coffee with to discuss the possibility of this?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I know a few people that could probably help me out in that way. I just haven't thought about it like that.
And you'd be helping them out, right?
Right.
It really is. You're going. What I'm inviting you to do is to not jump too quickly. Go on what I call a first date with. You say you know a few. Let's say there's three of them. Go on a quote first date with all three. Have coffee with them. Share the idea. Ask their opinion. What do you think? Where would you ask them what your strengths and weaknesses would be about this? How exciting or not are you about this? What kind of compensation would be appropriate for you? And you kind of be very stateswoman-like about it. And then you will likely choose one of them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that idea. That sounds totally doable.
Well, I'm really glad that you do, and thanks very much for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Thanks for your help.
Sure. And if you would like my help, again, it doesn't matter what the topic is. As long as it's related to work, it could be starting a business. Maybe you want to run your business idea by me. Maybe you're older and afraid of not being employable, or you are employed and afraid you're not as good as you used to be, but you can't afford to quit or retire. Maybe you're a clerk and sick and tired of being low level. Maybe you have a really super successful career and you're unhappy nevertheless and don't know what the heck to do about it. Those are all good reasons to call for what I call a work over here on Work with Marty Nemko and KALW. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. In the meantime, more of these careers that are projected to show accelerated growth in the next 5 years put out by Career Builder. Warehouse clubs and supercenters. Many of us decry the decline of small stores, small bookstores, small local markets, local this. But the reality is that humankind is voting with their feet. They're going to Costco and Walmart and Target, and they're not going to the mom and pop because the greater selection. And I had to go to a hardware store, and I said I'm going to go to a local hardware store, but it was like the one I went to was supposed to be in Montclair. It had closed, even though it was still showing on Yelp. I went to another one in Montclair, and it closed at 6 o'clock, and I was just after 6 o'clock. So I ended up having to go to Home Depot. So the point is, because of the selection and the convenience and the prices, it's not surprising that the Career Builder study is finding a growth in warehouse clubs and supercenters. So there you go. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello?
Yeah, hello. Are you speaking to me?
I am.
Yeah, hi. I have a job. I work on call. And I get paid by the hours that I actually work, not the hours that I wait for work to come in.
Mm.
And I understand I'm trying to get a better understanding of the overtime laws and how I might make this work out better. Wintertime is slow for us.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's not an area I know a lot about. I do know that there was a law changed a few years ago that it's not just to whether it's 40 hours in a week if you work more than 40 hours a week, but if you work more than 8 hours in a day. I don't know the nuance about whether when you're waiting, when that is supposed to be paid time or not. I don't want to go beyond what I know. Fortunately, my board operator, Joanne Marr, is a lawyer. I think she's an employment lawyer, and she's jotting me, or not, she's writing me a note, and or at least maybe she'll tell us a source of where you might want to go. So what I think I'm going to ask you to do is, no, I think, yes, are you going to bring that into me, Joanne? Yeah, so tell me what kind of work you do while we're waiting for Joanne to come in.
I operate a boat. Towing service.
Okay, and so are you self-employed, or are you employed by these boat owners?
I'm an employee of a company, and I operate their boat when they tell me to. It's sort of like AAA roadside assistance, that type of thing.
Right. So you could be at home, but when you get a call on your phone, you say, "Go out and help this guy." Is that
correct?
The way it kind of works. Okay. I'm still waiting. When she's getting the information, she's got something for you, I'm sure. But tell me a little bit about it. How'd you get into that kind of work?
Here's the work is that I'm expected to be within 10 or 15 minutes from the boat at the most. Sometimes I'm on call for 2 weeks. You know, every day, every night.
Right.
And when I'm billing hours in the summertime, it can be 16. I can bill sometimes 12, 16 hours in a day. Sometimes a lot, you know, often a lot less. But it's not unusual at all to go over 10 hours in the in a day, and maybe 60 hours a week. And then in the wintertime, it's almost nothing. You know, sometimes I go 3 days without a call at all.
Okay, so the note that I just got from Joanne says you should call a lawyer Wednesday, October 26th between 7 and 8 p.m. during the show Your Legal Rights here on KALW, and there'll be an employment law specialist. That's Wednesday, October 26th between 7 and 8 p.m. I hope that helps.
It does. Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care. All right, we're going to go back to the phones in just a moment. As soon as we can get that line cleared. And yes, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, my name is Connor. I graduated in 2014 with a creative writing degree, and I just want to work it with writing, and I don't really know how to get involved in that at all.
Right. There's the quintessential, it's a kind of almost a spiritual dilemma. The writing jobs that pay, most of them, tend to be jobs that generate money for people. That is, writing annual reports, writing catalog copy, website copy on e-commerce sites. But most of the people who majored in creative writing want to write novels, poems, short stories, personal essays, etc. And that tends, you know, while there's a few people who make a really good living doing that, most don't. I have written 20 essays for Time magazine, and even though I'm not shy about negotiating, they paid me zero. Zero. I write for Psychology Today. Currently, I'm not allowed to say my compensation, but I can tell you that the pay is not sustainable. So sometimes it depends on what day you ask me. And I have written 8 books and 3,000 articles, all published, well published. And so sometimes I say, if I knew then what I know now, and if I were 16 years old, there's a part of me that would not go to college and just write, even if I have to live in poverty, because it's so meaningful to me. And there are other times that feel like, you know, there's so much writing out there, there's so much content, I'm really not that, you know, different than a million other writers. It's going to get lost, and I'm a grain of sand on the beach of writing. And so to hell with it, I'll just write as kind of a hobby, which is kind of what I do. I write because I need to. I must write, but I don't rely on it for my living. There is no right or wrong answer to that question. The question is, in your soul, in your value system, what is right for you? Which of those two feels more right to you?
I just want to use my skill set as it is now. And, I mean, I would like to get into copywriting. That's essentially what
okay.
I want to do, or like you said earlier, grant writing. I just don't know how to create a portfolio or things like that. Maybe.
Okay. Oh, great. Okay. Well, then you made my life easier, because you've chosen the commercial choice. It's easier to go that route. So, how to create a portfolio? Now, let's try to decide. There's a big difference in the world, big difference between being a copywriter and being a grant writer. If there was a God, would the God look down and you say you have greater natural talent for writing grant proposals, in which you're having to interview a lot of people, come up with fresh ideas for new programs, carefully read grant proposal request and unearth that stuff and turn it into a clever, beautifully written piece? Or are you more likely to, let's take a website, let's just some website that creates, new cool gadgets or whatever. Are you more likely to write scintillating copy about those new gadgets or the grant proposal?
I think I could write clever cleverly, and I think that that isn't so much a grant proposal thing. Like, I find it hard to read. I think I would do better at writing copy.
Okay, and so let's try to narrow it down. I mean, you could simply try to answer all ads for anything you see related to copywriting, or you could be a little more focused. Is there the do you have domain expertise, content expertise, with a certain kind of products or services?
Not really. Maybe only in things that I use. Like, I started writing something about my Toyota Yaris.
Right.
That I really like.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know. I mean, maybe I could write about, like, apps, certain apps that I use.
Okay. And let's see. So let's look at the pros and cons. I mean, there clearly are some auto writers who, you know, you talk about Toyota. It happens Joanne used to drive a Yaris, I believe. No? Okay, or Tercel, that's what you had. But yeah, we're Toyota fans, so there's a smile because they're certainly remarkably reliable cars. Picture yourself, and I'm using the word deliberately, picture yourself working for Toyota. You know, they obviously have a tremendous amount of copy that's written in for their brochures, for their website, for their public relation events. They do a lot. And picture yourself for writing for some tech company where you are reviewing apps. Do you have the technical chops and interest in one or the other of those two things that would make that a first choice, or are they both equal and you should just try to, you know, answer ads from every car company and every high-tech publication, you know, Gizmodo and Lifehacker and all the rest of them that are popular these days? What would the wise man within you tell you to do? Pursue both or pursue one as a plan A and the other as a plan B?
I mean, I think that I can't really see myself writing either. Or, I mean,
okay.
I don't have the skills yet to write for either.
That's okay. That's where the portfolio comes in. So let's say you picked one. Let's say you're excited. If I waved a magic wand and said you had the competence to write for either of them, would you write for either of them, or would you write for something other than either of those two?
I feel like I would like to write for Toyota.
Great.
That would be cool.
Okay, great. So you kill two birds with one stone. You gain skills as well as you end up having a marketing piece for yourself by looking on the Toyota website and seeing a lot of what they have written. I'm sure there are press releases. I'm sure there's description of cars. I'm sure there's statements about upcoming events, all kinds of stuff. Find three that you find appealing and take a shot at writing your own press release, your own description of, for example, there's a new Toyota Prius Prime, which is an electric vehicle, or a Mirai, which is a nitrogen vehicle. Try writing doesn't mean anything long. Try writing a one pager on that and then show it to some people, maybe your former teachers. You majored in creative writing. Show it to somebody you respect at wherever you went to school, or somebody who already is a copywriter, somebody maybe you find on LinkedIn or whatever, who's a professional copywriter, maybe even somebody who's working for Toyota. Ask for their feedback. Don't necessarily accept it. But take it seriously. I remember once I had written an article, and some guy with the American Association of Higher Education said, "You can't write." Well, in the end, I've now had 8 books and 3,000 articles published. So I'm not asking you to take it verbatim, but certainly at this point, when you feel you don't have the competence yet to be a Toyota writer, it's take your best shot and then get feedback from people, ideally, who are in the industry who may be able to give you some good feedback. And do the same thing for some, you know, whether it be apps or whatever. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then when you've polished it and gotten the feedback, now you have a portfolio. Now you can answer ads in Toyota where they will have a writing-centric job. It may not be 100% writing, but it may have a component of writing in it. Or you can reach out to somebody in there, not the director or vice president for communication, that's too high level because you're just breaking in, but maybe somebody who's a manager or supervisor in the communications department of Toyota. And that might be a way to launch your career. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care. If you would like me to help you, whether you're interested in for-profit or non-profit, all I care about is you got a career problem, don't know how to address it, particularly if you're not quite sure what you want to be when you grow up, even if you are already grown up. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko for what I call a workover, 415 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. What I've been doing is I've been sharing some careers that I think are burgeoning. And to this point, I have focused on careers that were identified in a study of accelerated growth careers according to CareerBuilder, which is a the labor market analyst, whatever, I don't know. It's MC. Anyway, it doesn't matter. CareerBuilder. It's a major company that does this data analysis stuff. But now I'm going to, from my more subjective, well, you know, there I relied on the objective, I'm going to move to some subjective recommendations that I think are likely to burgeon. But first, I want to prioritize you, so I'll go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It is your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi. I'm a technical writer.
Uh-huh.
And that used to be listed one of the, you know, top 10, you know, growing professions not so many years ago.
Right.
And I noticed it was not mentioned today, so I'm curious if that if it's been demoted. And I'm wondering if you have any idea about the future of technical writing.
Yeah. I think these were the kind of the very fastest growing. I don't think tech writing is dead at all, but it is one of those careers that's very subject to being offshored. Because there's, mm-hmm. you don't normally need a human being. If it's, you know, tech writing is normally about a piece of software or hardware, and they can email you the software or the hardware, and somebody in India or elsewhere or Ireland, I always talk about India because so much offshoring goes there, but there's a lot of offshoring for English language work that goes, for example, to Ireland and other countries as well. So it's vulnerable unless it's the kind of technical writing where it really helps to be on site and have an ongoing set of interactions, perhaps during even the product development process. So I'm agnostic on it. I'm not bearish on it, but I think it's potentially vulnerable. What's, from your perspective as a guy who's in the field, what's your reaction to my reaction?
Well, I think you've got some good points. I think a lot of it's been offshore, but there's sort of like a reverse trend now.
Mm-hmm, I know.
That's going the opposite way because
some of it.
From the language issues.
Some of
but
it.
But a lot of tools are being developed overseas. A lot of tech writing tools are being developed overseas.
Yeah,
at the same time, I want to encourage your previous caller who is looking for a writing career. Now, there is a dearth of technical writers in the United States right now. I'm just noticing that, you know, I work with engineers. The engineers are in their late 20s or early 30s, and their managers are in their 40s.
Mm-hmm.
In the technical writing world, like, I haven't met a technical writer under 30 in a long time. And I think it's sort of a I think we're not creating new technical writers. So no. I think that as time goes on, there's going to be a continuing need for technical writers. I worked for a company, and I would be my previous company. I would help in the interview process, and you know, everyone we were interviewing was in their 40s and 50s because there just weren't any technical writers younger than that available. So I mean, it's a good. It seems to be safer for ageism.
Yeah,
but I think that we need. I think that there needs to be a new generation of technical writers.
I think that's a real good contribution. That voice from the street, you know, that's very valuable. And certainly, what do you think? You know, I've had clients who've completed certificate programs at UC Extension for tech writing. What do you feel about those? What do you think is the best way to get? Let's say, for example, that previous guy. Let's say he was intrigued by what you said and he wanted to get smart training. Would he do it on his own and just get feedback from people, or would he go take a certificate program and from whom? You have any opinion about that?
Well, I would recommend that he, start, more in the marketing area, like more technical marketing area, where he would be writing about software products, maybe doing more of the marketing side, and that would allow him to. You know, determine whether he has a technical aptitude to kind of go deeper into the really more technical writing. I was an English major, and I came up through the marketing department, believe it or not. And when opening came up with technical writing, my company let me bump over. And that, I think that's a solid path as long as you can demonstrate your skill and your knowledge of the product.
One clarifying question: I understand the marketing, is going to be more lightweight. It's not that detailed. But when I think of the in-depth technical writing, the first thing that comes to mind is user manuals and community, facts that are on websites. Is that what you're referring to, or is there some other aspect of technical writing that's important that I should keep in mind and my listeners should keep in mind?
Well, there's a lot of technical writing that's directed at developers, not users, and administrators, system administrators. So this is the kind of technical documentation that your normal person doesn't see. You'd have to be sort of like a sysadmin at a large company to see this kind of documentation, or a developer who's trying to, you know, tinker with the product and connect to it.
I see.
They're going to use an API documentation, which is very technical.
So
but
it's
not
see.
Hard to write. It's not hard to write once you get into the field.
Got
it's
it.
Not hard to pick these things up.
So it's documenting the progress that's being made during the product development cycle. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And helping and writing for the people who are going to develop the product in the field.
Great. And, you know, you are an honored member of the Work with Marty Nemco workforce. I love when my listeners, clearly the crowdsourced information is more than any Marty Nemco could have in his brain. So I really appreciate you taking the time to call.
I'd like to add that it pays very well.
That's great. Perfect. Thank you so much for calling Work with
Marty
Nemco. Okay. I'll give out the phone number again. If you have you want my help or you've got something to contribute to a previous caller's question, you're certainly welcome to call. But whatever your career-related problem, it's fair game here on Work with Marty Nemco and KALW. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, I'm a recently returned Peace Corps volunteer, and I'm 65.
Okay.
I actually went in as a business advisor, and I've taught classes on being an entrepreneur because I had my own business for 30 years prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I came back pretty much ruined my hands in the Peace Corps, and mm-hmm. now
how'd you do that? How'd you ruin your hands in the Peace Corps when you were being a business advisor?
Right. I was assigned to teach women sewing, and their machines, they pretty much knew how to sew, but their machines were all rusted. So I fixed sewing machines for 2 years and wore my hands to the bone.
Whoa. Yeah.
So at 65, I feel stalled as to here I've been actually teaching people how to be entrepreneurs, start your own business, and I don't know what to do. First of all, try to find a career that doesn't use your hands.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, it hurts to be on a keyboard.
Yeah, I understand.
Sewing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so give me some clues. First of all, sometimes money is the top priority. Sometimes money is not very important. Sometimes not important at all. Where is money in the equation for you?
That sums of money are not important. Just something to sustain myself, pretty much part-time because I'm also a grandmother to a brand new baby. I spend
uh-huh.
a lot of time over
uh-huh.
there. But I just need a part-time income.
Okay, but you do need income, not volunteer work. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
I do a lot of volunteer work also, but I do need income.
Got it. And does the goddess within you say you need to work for somebody else or be self-employed? Or you're not sure?
The goddess in me is self-employed, yes.
Okay. And does what was the work you did for the 35 years? What kind of self-employment did you do in that during that time?
It was a sewing business.
It was a sewing business.
Yeah, and interior design.
And does the goddess within you say you should, if your hands are no good, but let's say, for example, I know a woman who makes a lot of money making custom draperies. And she doesn't do the work herself. She hires people to do the work, but she's the front person. She's the estimator. She's the designer. Do you want to go back to some kind of sewing-related work, but not in the hands-on capacity?
Yes and no. Management has not always been my strong point.
Okay. What if we kept it simple? What if it was not... Management implies this big, complicated deal. What if there was simply one person that you know, at the risk of my being redundant with a previous caller, there was one human being whom you know, whom you like, who could be doing some of the work and for whom management would not be as stressful a process. Is that realistic for you or not?
I guess that would be realistic. It's kind of where my heart's going because I don't want to leave this sewing behind. I still
mm-hmm.
love it.
Oh, good. Okay. And so, right, I always like to make things concrete. Is there a human being that you're aware of who's got sufficient sewing skills, perhaps with some coaching from you, who you would enjoy working with and you could make more money because you're the front person doing, you know, going out and making estimates and marketing and networking and all the rest of it, which is something, you know, that doesn't tax your hands. Can you see, do you know a person who could work with you on that? Does that feel on the money or off the money and in what ways?
I'm new to the community, and yet I can probably find someone. I don't, at the moment, know anyone here.
Now, this may sound ridiculous. Now, what kind of sew would you focus on? I mentioned curtains, draperies, because it was, I think it's called Draperies by Susan. I've seen her ads for years.
Okay.
So, do any of the following feels like a way to find somebody? So, let's assume that you thought about the person or two you know, and it doesn't work out. I mean, talking to the owner of a sewing store where they have these, very often I think they have, you know, needlepoint and other kind of sewing groups, knitting groups, macrame groups, whatever, and ask, who is there? Is there a nice person there who might be open to a part-time job doing sewing, whatever it is you're interested in? Could you see going to the owners of those kind of sewing stores? And because they have a wide range of people that they've been exposed to. Any sense about, any feeling about whether that's something you would want to do?
That's an excellent idea. There is a woman who runs a sewing workshop, kind of storefront here.
Yeah.
Because I went to her to hopefully get a teaching job, and they don't need anyone, but that's a great idea.
And what, I'm delighted. And what would be, you know, we live in an era of specialization. Would you be a generalist seamstress business, or would you focus like Susan did on draperies, or would there be something else that you feel you have a particular gift for, or there's a particular need for? What are your thoughts about what if anything, you might specialize in?
My specialty for the 30 years has been pretty much in sewing for the bedroom. In fact, my tagline is, what you do in your bedroom is my business.
I love it. That's very cute. That's a wonderful line. I love it. And so you're making custom comforters and duvet covers and things like that?
Canopy beds and pillows.
Yeah. And looking back on the 35 years, is there equal demand for, you know, did you get most of your profits and pleasure from the canopy beds, from the pillows, from drapery, or is it all across the board?
Probably more pillows and bed skirts.
Okay. And so, if your marketing focus, you keep your slogan, it's fabulous. But if you specifically mention first pillows and bed skirts,
okay,
and then you also mention, you know, now is duvet cover, is that the same as a bed skirt?
No, duvet is like a big pillowcase for a quilt.
Okay. I see. Bed skirt is this little skirt that goes around to decorate and hide the box springs. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. That's really exciting. And now, do you have photographs of your work, or, you know, that you could put on your website or show to potential customers? Do you have a?
I do. I've got an excellent website that my daughter set
up
for me.
Well, that sounds great. Just do make sure, you know, you're not looking to make huge amounts of money. So don't go crazy with this. Try to find one human being who you could, and this seems like an odd thing, laugh with, where it's easy, where it's not stressful. You say you're not a natural manager.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, the assistants I've had in the past, they definitely laughed a lot.
That's what we want. That's what you need somebody who who's not a flake. You want them to laugh, but you also want them to either know a lot already about sewing or very good at learning it or a natural aptitude, and who are going to be reliable, not flake on you, make you crazy because they're flaking. Somebody who's, you know, there's a term I like to use, it's called mensch. It's a person of character. Somebody who's a person of character who also likes to, who you just click with, and that may get you the money you need and have fun. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. I think I just have gone from stalled to jazzed.
I'm really excited. That makes me, you know, as I get older, there's nothing that makes me happier than being helpful. Nothing, period.
Thank you.
Anyway.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I really love encouraging people, so that's excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for calling Work with Marty Nemco. And hopefully not only did you help yourself and you may have made me feel good, but hopefully our other listeners can see stalled is not a permanent state of affairs. For you to say I went from stalled to jazz is just like so awesome. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. I'd like to try to help you go from stalled to jazz. I can't lie to you and say that I always do, but I sometimes do. So if you are stalled and want to get unstuck, choose your metaphor. I'll do my best to help. I can promise you that. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And before we took the calls, I was explaining that, well, in the first part of the show, I described some careers that a rigorous survey shows was accelerating over the next 5 years. But not everything can be reduced to data. There is subjectivity. There's intuitions. So here are some careers that I think are likely to accelerate, and I have no data for it, but it's just an intuition. Alas and alack, we all know that debt in this country is enormous, whether it be the federal debt, which is approaching $20 trillion, or individual debt. So much is indeed college. So much is cost of health care debts. It's only a small percentage of people whose debt is caused by big spending on frivolous items. There really are huge college debts that are people can't pay them back because there just aren't enough jobs for people. And health care costs are just bizarre. Even, you know, if you've got insurance, very often copays and the like are desperate. So what do you've got? And there is still a materialistic, not so much in the Bay Area, much of the Bay Area, but there are many people who are shallow materialists and buy cars on credit, a five-year, you know, take out a five-year loan and they're paying all this interest. So that's all by way of saying that I think that debt collecting is going to be a growing career if you feel okay about that. And I think ethically one can. If, in fact, like, for example, if I went and borrowed money for anything, for a house, for a car, for whatever, I have essentially made a fairly sacred contract that says I will do everything in my power to pay this money back. And if I don't, and a debt collector calls and I say, give me the money now or else. But the debt collector calls to say, let's see if we can work this out. I'd like to hear your situation. You do own the money. You agree to, you know, to pay it in exchange for getting that car. How can we work this out to everybody's cosmic advantage? So even something that seems as heartless as debt collector could be a heart-centered career. So debt collector is a career that I think is likely, alas, to grow, and yet is not necessarily unethical. The word, you notice listeners to the show, including the previous caller, use the word community all the time. We no longer talk about a neighborhood or individuals. Everything is part of a community, which has its derivation in commune, collective. We are, especially here in the Bay Area, more about community, collective. And that filters into the way in which companies and nonprofits work. There are community organizers, community developers, people whose job it is to relate to the community, run meetings, take consumer complaints. I think that's an area that is also going to grow. Again, especially the one thing that Hillary does not talk about is controlling the deficit. She is a Keynesian, which means she believes that it's okay to expand the government in tough times. And so likely she's going to be funding initiatives, whether it be police, community relations people to improve relationships between, quote, again, the community and the police. But I think that's going to be across everything, across housing, crossing public health care. So I think community developer, community relations is an area that is likely to grow if indeed the 538.com projection polls is accurate, which according to them is that Hillary is pretty much a slam dunk to win. And the Democrats to take control of the Senate. And of course, that California is clearly a very blue state, and there's no reason to think that that, you know, especially with the national zeitgeist moving in a more liberal big government direction, that indeed state government, which is already dominated by the Democrats, will continue. So I am bullish on, you know, it doesn't matter what my personal political views are. I am bullish from a career counselor perspective on the idea that there will be more opportunities, especially more opportunities for full-time benefit and not temp part-time jobs in the government sector. And a community developer, a community organizer is one example of that. Similarly, the schools are asked to do ever more. The schools are asked to deal with drug problems. And again, with marijuana being legalized, nobody could say that there's going to be less drug use. And that does sometimes, let's just say, sometimes causes problems. There will be a need for more school counselors to deal with substance abuse, gangs, the challenges that kids, the greater pressure, if knowing that there are ever fewer good jobs when they graduate high school or even college, there's a lot of high stress. And so in certain communities, they have a problem of students killing themselves. There's been movies and videos about this, killing themselves to take the SAT three times and take courses and ride crew and do all of it and serve soup for the homeless so they show that they're good liberals, you know, and students are stressed out. All of those are some examples of reasons why, in my judgment, there'll be an increase in the number of school counselors. Again, this is government funded. And so, again, I really think that there will be likely over the next, you know, 4-8 years, maybe even this is a long-term trend, there will be more hiring in the government sector for things like school counselor. Now, this is the next career is, let me give it the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, either you're unemployed or unhappily employed, and whatever your age, whatever your, as they say, one of the KLW slogans used to be, your station in life. Whatever your station in life, I can usually help with a work-related problem. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. This next career that I think is likely to continue to grow is going to be college recruiter. As I said, with ever more people being unhappy with the job prospects that accrue with a college degree and the prospects of mammoth debt, colleges, especially private colleges, the public still, you know, they have a cost advantage because they rely on taxpayer dollars for much of what they charge. So they still are, you know, relatively inexpensive compared to, especially the community colleges, compared to the private colleges. But the private colleges are under really difficult marketing pressure. And I'm not talking about the for-profit career colleges. I'm talking about the Dominicans and the St. Mary's and the Santa Clara's and the USF and the Golden Gates and, you know, not the designer. The Stanford's not going to have trouble recruiting. They're going to get plenty of students because we live in a designer label society. Yeah. But the non-brand name colleges that are charging almost as much as the Stanford's, they have a hard sell. And so I think they're going to have to, if they want to stay in business, they're going to be boosting their marketing efforts. And so being a recruiter for a college, if you believe in private colleges, especially if you're a graduate of one, they like to hire their own, that I believe is going to be a growing area. Another one is recruiters, part-time recruiters. You know, there is a slow, it's not a fast, I'm not trying to say it, I'm not being catastrophizing here. There is a slow trend toward replacing more full-time benefited jobs with these part-time temp jobs. And so working, as I said at the top of the show, working for a temp agency in the sales role, and that is something that wasn't listed in the data, but is also my subjective opinion, I think is a good area. Similarly, again, following on this theme of government growing, likely to continue to grow, one of the more important under-the-radar positions in government is called analyst. The government, federal government, state government, maybe even, I'm sure, even local government, uses analysts to manage, you know, analyzing management practices. Let's say there is a office of the Social Security Department that is in kind of disarray for one reason or another. They have analysts to go in and analyze what's going on. There are program analysts. There are people who take a program, let's say for Native American AIDS prevention, and look at all the different programs that either have been done and what's working and what's not, and coming up with new ideas. Program analysts, those are jobs that are, I think, likely to burgeon. Budget analysts, you know, while on the one hand we may say government is going to grow, there certainly is some attempt to try to keep control of things, and so they all are certainly on budgets. And so somebody who's a budget analyst to see where the money is going, where might it be reallocated. Those are all federal government jobs. And finally, evaluator. Now, the evaluator job, program evaluator, is not just for the government. It's a wonderful field. Actually, it was part of my PhD. I'm an important part. And it's a great field. Evaluating programs. The government and nonprofits and for-profits have programs that they try out. And before they get refunded, they want an evaluation, understandably. What's working? What's not working? How might be improved? Should it be scrapped? And it's a fascinating job because you are getting to know a innovative program for a couple of months, and then you're on to another one. You're not stuck in one field for your whole life. So if you like novelty, that's a particularly good idea. I've got some more. But I'd like to give out the phone number one more time. Anybody have a work-related problem they'd like my help with? The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Some other careers that I think are likely to grow. Again, I want to stay within this government theme because it's really my meta view of what's really going to be growing, not corporations. I think corporations are going to get ever more taxed and ever more regulations, and they're going to be tightening belts. And where they're hiring, they're going to ever more do part-time temp offshoring. But government, I don't think, is going to do that as much. And so there's an area that is not sexy, but nonetheless is critical, and that is financing. If indeed we are going to be, government is going to take on more debt, somebody has to figure out how to do that. What kind of loans? Where is it going to be financed? What is going to be the deals? So being an expert in public finance, how government agencies can raise money, it's quite technical. But I think that is a likely, again, I'm just projecting on the assumption that Hillary is going to win and that government, we're generally more, America is moving toward being more comfortable with bigger government. I believe that financing it, you know, whether it be through taxes, whether it be through private funding, whether it be through bond issues and what kind, I think that that is going to be a growing area and an under-the-radar niche. Certainly no, very few people have graduated even from a Stanford saying, gee, I think I want to be a public finance expert. That, I like under-the-radar careers, and I think that's one. Okay. What's another? This, another kind of under-the-radar one that's not government. I think I need to go away from government for a while here. Packaging design. For those people who are artistic but want to make a living, it's kind of cool to come up with a way to make a product that's that will fit on the shelves efficiently, that doesn't use a lot of environmentally bad products, that's convenient. I like a Trident chewing gum. I like chewing gum. I read when I remember reading a study that says your intelligence increases for 5 to 10 minutes after you chew gum. So very often before I have an important meeting or I'm thinking about my next Psychology Today article, I'll chew a piece of gum. But I did, as I usually love Googling, and I Googled and I found that, in fact, the aspartame or whatever, it's probably safe, but there's a little question, whereas xylitol, which is what's used in Trident, is apparently safer. So why do I mention that? The packaging is brilliant. It is minimal packaging on the outside, but it's got this little kind of aluminum line-ish liner, so it stays fresh. Each piece is individually wrapped, but easy to open, and it looks lovely, and it's got a little, it's like an envelope. It closes and opens beautifully. Somebody or a team of people developed that packaging, and that's a pretty cool thing for somebody who is artistic with a little bit of engineering-ish in them, or maybe a lot. I don't know what's required. But it's under the radar, certainly. I think packaging design is a pretty cool career. I've got time for one more. Again, under the radar, perfumer. You know, everything we use, I'm not talking about perfume. Most people, you know, many fewer people, it seems to me, are using perfume than they used to. But everything, our shampoos, our soaps, I just bought Brillo pads. They're scented. So it's a career that people don't think about. But if you are a chemist kind of person, but like being practical and like consumer products, it may be not such a bad idea to consider looking into being a perfumer. And in fact, I happen to know that Procter & Gamble has its own, as many corporations do, it has an internal university to train people who are going to be perfumers. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday. I want to thank certainly Joanne Marr for being so attentive all the time, really is. Next Sunday, very interesting show. I'm going to be talking with Brandon Halliwell. He went from hanging out at raves to being homeless to being a Marine to being a task rabbit, and now he makes a six-figure income. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't. Thank you.